Blog Talk Radio.
We've got film. And we've got psychology. When we put the two together, we've got filmcology. Each week, we will look at the psychology of the characters in film, and it gives us something lovely to think about. So, let's get started. Filmcology is now.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Filmcology. If you'd like to join into the conversation or my ramblings, or you have a point to make about the films that we talk about, please call in, and the number is 646-727-2914. Just understand that my opinions may not necessarily be similar to yours or anything that you may see in a chat room or something like that, but it doesn't, you know, they don't have to match mine. Just understand. And also, when I do review different movies, I am not putting forth my particular belief system on anything. I choose movies sometimes because it's just something that caught my eye. Sometimes there's something that is inherent to either some culture or another culture or something that I find I don't know too much about and I'd like to learn about. Or because, quite honestly, I think it's a classic, or it has, there could be any number of reasons. Just want to let you know that when we do filmcology, it really is to explore how the psychology behind the characters or the aspects of the film may matter to some aspect in our lives or someone else's life that we know. But it's really to help people to understand without feeling the stigma, which, please, can we let go of it, of mental health issues, mental health treatment, seeking mental health treatment. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just as everyday normal as you going to the butcher, baker, candlestick maker, your surgeon, or your primary physician, your naturopath, any of those professionals. The reason that there's been so much stigma with the mental health is because everyone's so fearful that someone might find out that maybe they're having a bad day, or the most commonly, somebody's going to have a perception that you can't handle something, your life or your family or whatever. The person who seeks help is probably the person who's better able to handle things because they're able to get it off their chest or, you know, to vent. So hopefully with Filmcology, you'll get more and more used to how common psychology affects our lives all the time. As a matter of fact, before we get into this documentary that we're going to get into, psychology is being used on you 24 hours a day, just about. If you watch TV, there's most likely a psychologist somewhere attached to the advertising firm that is marketing to you so that they use the information that we as psychologists and scientists in the mental health industry, what we study, they're constantly looking at that to see if that may sort of push you towards their product or if it's pushing you away from their product. All that kind of stuff is going on, and it's all affecting you. So I think that the more that you become friends with psychology to the point of accepting it as just a regular part of any life, then the less manipulated you'll be because you'll understand a lot more about what makes you tick, what motivates you, and how to not allow someone else to motivate you in ways you don't want to be motivated. So again, Filmcology, film and psychology. The movie that we're looking at today is Love, Marilyn. Now, this documentary is, I mean, there's so many movies. There's so much written about Marilyn Monroe. There is all her films or what they are, whether you think they're good, they're bad, or whatever, but she's, it's hard to deny that she's someone that catches your eye in one way or another, whether you see her as this tragic, iconic person in society, or you see her as somebody who's been manipulated and abused like many people who have been in the entertainment field have, because everybody wants to see them, everyone wants to get close to them, and so people who are money grubbing and power hungry, well, yeah, they're drawn to anything that's going to capture our attention. Psychology. And so Marilyn Monroe was one of those people. And she's even more intriguing from a psychological perspective because Marilyn was so much more than meets the eye. She was, yes, a very beautiful woman, very cute in the face. She had all those iconic things that make people like her, desire her. She was always smiling. She had the perfect eyebrows for enticing people in. I remember reading many years ago, before I actually started studying psychology seriously, that people whose eyebrows are arched up in the middle the way that they are, like Marilyn's eyebrows, and there's a lot of people who have eyebrows like that where their eyebrows are arched up at a point or there's a nice high curvature, it imparts to other people that they're interested in you. If you think about when you look in the mirror and you're looking back at yourself, if you raise your eyebrows, like when you're like, oh, really? And you think you're really interested, just try looking in a mirror at yourself and just making that face like you're really interested in something, like, really? Oh, wow. So that's basically what people are sort of feeling, that somebody is interested in them when they see people's faces with those arched eyebrows. Now, there are some people in fashion who understand that, and they shave off their eyebrows, and they've drawn an arched eyebrow or something like that. I'm not speaking as to whether that's good or bad, whatever. I'm just telling you these are some of the effects, psychological effects that affect us. And so that actually helped contribute to the fact that so many people would look at Marilyn and just think, she just seems so wonderful. And she did smile quite a bit. She was really tuned in to providing for her public. Actually, she was somebody who had a bit of a rough childhood from the perspective of the instability of her mother, who was who did have some mental health issues. But back in those days, the way they dealt with mental health or mental imbalances were almost, I would say, they were, it was almost so harsh that it may have caused more mental imbalances than it actually helped balancing people's mental health. So her, and then the other thing is the stigma was even more horrendous back in the day, 20, 30, and 40 years ago. If somebody even heard that you might have gone to the hospital, and it wasn't just, if they found out that it was specific towards mental health, then society sort of wrote you off as dangerous, useless, good for nothing, all kinds of negativity. But, and yes, we are going to get to the movie, but these are things that need to be said because it relates to this type of movie, documentary, which gives us some brilliant insight into somebody from their own words. So this Marilyn had this childhood that was so unstable, going from one family member household to another. I believe that she had some foster care time in there. And it was just like she was passed over here and there. It's a really cute little kid who was just, as everybody noted, that she was quite nice. She was a nice young lady. And one of the things that you will find often associated with the entertainment field, especially actors, is that they had issues in their childhood that made escape so much more necessary as a coping skill for them or coping mechanism. So they either dreamed about all kinds of places and situations, and they acted them out in their head, or they acted them out with their friends. They were just trying to find some sense of control in an unstable environment. Now, yes, there are also people in the entertainment field that have parents that were just so magnanimous, and they, you know, gave all this incredible confidence to their children, and they, you know, felt they could do anything, so they were given permission to just be whoever they wanted to be, and so they would be different people all the time and put on plays. People I can think of right off the bat, people like Katharine Hepburn, John Travolta, those two had parents in family lives that, regardless of whatever their financial means were, they celebrated the individuality of their children, and they celebrated the talents of their children. So then there's Marilyn. You know, it's sort of like the little urchin that kept getting passed around. But she knew she wanted to act. She wanted to be in films. And she wanted to be really good at acting, and that's one of those things that comes out in her writing. If you find the book, this movie is basically based on the book that you can find. It's called Letters from Marilyn, I think it is. I believe it's Letters from Marilyn, and she she was very candid in her writing. I don't think that she thought somebody else would read her work. And I thought she was a wonderful writer for what she did write. It was so heartfelt and so honest that we get to know her much better than what the general public tends to believe or know about her. So let's get started with the movie. Marilyn wrote diaries. She wrote poems. She wrote on all kinds of papers. She wrote letters. She was always writing to the people that she admired or that she looked up to. People like Lee Strasberg, and she had an acting coach. There were authors that she was really enamored with. She had a friend who was a poet and used to send Marilyn some of his work, and she would comment on it. And one of the things in the movie, the poet said that he loved sending his work to Marilyn because she understood his work. And I believe she understood so well, because even though she probably wouldn't consider herself a writer, she had the heart of a writer, and she definitely was an artist. She was constantly thinking. One of the things that I find is a little bit frustrating with a lot of people is they don't take time to think, like really think about things. It's, I don't know if it's this new technology that we have in life where you just go to the internet, you go watch Fox News or CNN or MSNBC, oh, whatever station, you go there to get your opinions. You don't find them out or research them yourself. You just wait for somebody else to tell you what you think. And then you start expressing that to everyone else around you. And then pretty soon somebody hears you say the same thing that somebody else across town said to them, and then maybe their father or their boyfriend or girlfriend said. And so then there's this acceptance that whatever was suggested is true or completely valid because they've heard it like 3, 4, 5, or 8 times. There must be something true. Or, you know, that old adage that people used to have in the 40s and 50s, well, it must be true because it was on the TV or you heard it on the radio. So it's, if you're thinking, if you actually take the time to think about what's going on around you or think about the new knowledge that has been presented to you and really consider whether that seems valid or not valid, maybe even check some of the facts out, then you're more likely a thinker. Thinkers, and obviously everybody thinks, but I'm talking about somebody who actually mulls over the information, really dissects it and figures out whether it's something they're willing to accept or they need more convincing. And I believe that, I tend to believe that people who do that are more intellectual. Maybe I'm trying not to say that people who don't think are stupid, because I don't really know stupid people. I've encountered a lot of misguided people or people who just didn't check their facts, things like that. But people who really think about what's coming into them and what they've experienced, or even the people that they meet, like I wonder when they're thinking about, I wonder why they think that, or I wonder how they felt about this or that or whatever, or the conversations. People who do that, I tend to believe, this is just my personal bias, and you don't have to accept it, I tend to believe that they're very intelligent. It takes some kind of intelligence to actually take time to think about things instead of just accepting what someone else says or does. Marilyn, by all accounts, if you watch this movie or you get the book, you see how she's working things out. She writes about things that she's trying to figure out. She writes about different parts of her craft as an actor. That's the one thing that is constantly true throughout most of her writing. As soon as she got into acting, and even before she started acting and she hoped to act, she was constantly studying her craft. I'm a psychologist, and I have so much, well, I'm a psychologist in training, and I have so much information that's coming my direction through school, through research, through the professional organizations that I belong to. It feels impossible to get through it all and still connect to all the people in my life. But there's a lot of information coming through. And I don't even write down all the things that are going on that come into my mind. I think about them a lot. I muse about them. I roll it over in my head. I might actually, almost always when something comes through and I'm not sure about it or I'm not convinced about it or I don't have any experience with it, then I start researching it. And Marilyn didn't have the advantage of the internet that we have today. It's really easy when somebody gives me a word or a concept or they talk about a study for me to go seek out the information and find out what it is. But Marilyn didn't have that. During her time, what she would do is she would write about it. She would write questions about it. She'd talk about who she was going to possibly talk to about it. It was just amazing to watch how this woman thought. Sure, she had a beautiful body, but quite honestly, I think she had an incredibly beautiful mind. If you could just not look at her outer exterior and you didn't know what she looked like and you watched this documentary and listening to some of the actors, they had actors come in, different actors, and who would actually sort of read some of the things that the different people in her life said or wrote about her or to her. It was like a wonderful play. It wonderful as in how it was staged, not necessarily everything that was said. But if you didn't know what Marilyn looked like and you were to watch this film and you didn't see anything about her, you just heard all the things that were written and said, I think you would find her to be just an incredible being. And you'd be extremely touched at her frailty and at her strength when you thought she was too frail to have any, and her intelligence. Just amazing. Amazing. I felt as I was watching this movie that she put me to shame, because even though people know me to be a writer and working on my degree in psychology, finishing it up here in the last, I feel like I don't work enough on my craft of my career of psychology. I feel like a child compared to the way she studied her craft and her constant inquisitiveness. I do have that. I think we certainly share this constant desire for knowledge and information. But she really worked at it. And I have been quite lazy at working at my career and my craft, and I have to say I'm often very lazy when it comes to working on my writing craft as well. When I do it, I do quite well. When I don't do it, I feel uncomfortable, and yet I will go periods without writing. And from Marilyn, it appears like she wrote every single day. She was really good at it. So the things that came out in this film that were, some of it's known, some of it's a little more detailed than probably you may have known about some of her relationships. It doesn't get into the down and dirty physical parts of the relationship, but it does talk about how she was perceiving the people around her and what she was giving to the people around her despite what she was getting back. It does appear in her writings that even the people that thought they were so close to her, like her husband, they didn't seem to see her completely. Or she was there as a means to an end for them, almost. And we have to look at the fact that Marilyn is also living during a time frame where women were treated in a subservient manner. Even though her first marriage she was married was more orchestrated by family members and neighbors, she sort of went along with it, and I believe that came from the fact that she was being passed around as who's going to take care of this girl, and she's lovely, but you know, so what? What are you going to do with her? And she did marry her first husband, and he was a regular Joe kind of guy. He was, I believe, a mechanic or something like that. Don't quote me on that, but he was a regular Joe, working guy, and he expected a regular type wife, somebody who would cook and clean and have things ready when you come home from work. And I believe that Marilyn, most of the time, her thoughts were on getting into acting. And I think that her husband, the first husband, he saw the vulnerability. I'm not going to spend the rest of the day trying to say that word, but you get my gist. He saw that about her, and I think he wanted to protect her, but he also understood that she had this desire to go and pursue acting as a career. And he, I believe, was an honorable man in that he allowed her to move on. He could have made things more difficult for her. Back in that day, if you were a wife and you didn't do what your husband said, well, you're either going to get beat, you're going to get chastised, or they find ways to use the system of society to keep you trapped or chained. They either say that you have a mental illness, and then all of a sudden you're in an institution. Pretty soon the institution breaks you down, and hopefully you'll be more docile when you are returned to your husband, who will then put you back to work as the way you're supposed to be. So I'm not saying it happened in all cases, but it happened quite a lot in that era. And society wasn't quite hip to the best way to treat their citizens, I guess. So, not from a psychological perspective anyway. So she goes on to look for work, and Marilyn, even she talks about the whole casting couch situation. She did go through the casting couch, and there were other people who tried to put her down for that, and she was not shy about or seemingly inhibited about the sexual activities that she was required to sort of engage in for her career, for life as a woman, and as a woman who was the object of desire of a lot of men. So it was interesting. I was impressed, actually, when it was asserted in the film where she was matter of fact about the casting couches and how people were sort of put off by the fact that she didn't pretend like it was just horrific and like she would never do such a thing. And she said that people who claimed that they didn't engage in the casting couches weren't being honest, and it was no big deal since everybody was doing it. And what was more important to her is to become an actor. I think it's the actor of Daryl Zanuck, I believe it was, in the film famous studio head. He had issues with her. He pretty much didn't think much of her, and so he was one of those obstacles in her life as she was trying to move up. And the studio heads were a big obstacle for most of Hollywood back in that day, unless you were, say, Cary Grant or Clark Gable. But you think about people like Katharine Hepburn, and most people don't think about, or Betty Davis, don't think about the obstacles that are out there. Joan Crawford ran it. All of those actors had issues with the studio heads. Somebody was always trying to control them. Because you wanted somebody to do something for you, well, you made sure you had leverage. Or you used the fact that you could change their lives there as far as stardom as leverage. Marilyn was battling that kind of thing, and she was really smart about how she handled it. When she was first starting out, she was very cool and even and acquiescing to the ones that she needed to be until she moved up in life, till she got higher in her star power. When she got more star leverage, then she started to call a few more of her shots. I mean, she was a really smart gal. The other thing is that you begin to see how her treatment by those who wanted to own her as if she was a piece of property. She was treated like property by a lot of studio heads, and I must say, some of her relationships, it started to wear on her, I believe, just based on the way her behavior was when she was starting out. She was full of confidence, and she had so much more bravado. She had bravado in a way that was I wouldn't say bravado quite like a Betty Davis or a Katharine Hepburn or a Joan Crawford, but it was the kind of bravado where she used her feminine wiles and still got the things that she needed to get. There is even a point in her career where she refused to work for a company because all they kept doing is giving her sex kitten parts, and she wanted to do more serious acting. And so they just refused to give her what she wanted, and so she decided that she was going to just leave. leave the industry for a while, or just at least that's what she sort of let them think, and she just took a long break. She wasn't around. The people who wanted her to be in a film, you know, eventually came to terms with the fact that they were going to have to, you know, give her some of the things that she wanted. She ended up negotiating some enormous contract. And at that time, I believe it was imparted in the movie that she was one of the highest paid actors at that time because she leveraged so well. Enter in people like Joe DiMaggio, and then later, I got to say his name right, Arthur Miller, not one of my favorite writers or people. I just think he was arrogant and cruel, but I never thought much of his work, but then I'm sure he didn't think anything of mine either, but anyway, so these people came into her life at different times. She seemed to be enamored with Joe DiMaggio and one of her best friends that she had that actually, her husband was a photographer that she, I think his name was Rice. It's one of her best friends. Her husband and her were Marilyn's best friend, two of her best friends. Well, the best friend said that there were times that Joe DiMaggio was actually hitting her or just fighting with her. It was just really loud, and there were people who lived next door that were horrified from the sounds, but her best friend kept saying, "Are you sure you want to be with that guy?" But Marilyn, I think from what she wrote about, it's just she felt protected by him to some extent. And she also indicated that he was really good in bed. There's a lot of women out there who have stayed for less in a relationship. But definitely, when you have nice, intimate connections, well, it can sway a person, whether you're female or male. So there was that. And then also in her marriage to Joe, she had, I believe she might have had miscarriage or two. The problems came in with Joe DiMaggio being extremely jealous, and quite honestly, he just wanted a wife that was going to just be his wife. Sort of weird when I think about that. It's like somebody wanting to go get the highest paid thoroughbred horse that's a top winner and has done the triple everything, and they want to go get that horse and then bring them home and strap on a plow, apparatus to plow their yards or their fields. It's inconceivable to most people who understand anything about horses or their quote unquote worth and what goes into that kind of a champion that could win all the horse races during the Triple Crown stuff. To think that somebody, it's ludicrous to think that somebody would get one of those horses, the top winner that's on top of the world, gorgeous, beautiful, totally bred for something else, and want to bring it home and make it a plow horse. We would find that inconceivable. And yet, that's the energy I always get with Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe. And when you listen to some of her writings, it's hard not to agree. As much as America loved their golden boy, Joe DiMaggio, and that was a bit of a problem because people don't want to believe that their hero, their all-American hero, could possibly ever strike Marilyn or yell and be mean to her because she seems so kittenish and frail, or to think that he would actually want her to just end her career to be his kept wife. And I don't think that being a wife is a derogatory thing, and I don't think that all wives are plow horses. That's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is when somebody's very good at what they do and they love doing what they do and it brings joy to hundreds of thousands and millions of people worldwide, just like you, I mean, how is it that you could ask them to give that up? I mean, how would he have felt if he married someone who decided he should give up being Mr. Coffee or Mr., you know, Baseball, anything like that? How is it that we can see so differently about others but not ourselves? It's very interesting, the psychology that's going on with the different players that were in Marilyn's life. The guy who she later married, Arthur Miller, in the movie, it was asserted that Elia Kazan did a lot of wonderful films. And it's a little, the jury's out for me on Elia Kazan because of other reasons, but he had some party or something he was throwing, and from just the way it was intimated in the writings and everything, it seemed like he had Marilyn was either sort of interested in him or they had some dalliance, but he didn't even want to go get her. She was going to go to the party, and he didn't really want to deal with her anymore, and he basically told Arthur Miller to just help him out with her, sort of keep her busy during the party so he wouldn't have to deal with her, which, yeah, bothers me. It bothers me when people do that kind of thing, period. Psychologically, it just seems creepy. If you don't want someone around, maybe you should just, like, let them know instead of treating them like a pariah. So Arthur Miller, he decided he was going to bring a limousine and go pick Marilyn up. He thought she was beautiful and gorgeous, and it's interesting because the way he talks about Marilyn in the beginning, what they have of his writings, that he talks about her as if he just knew that she was in love with him right away, and he talked about her as if he was in love with her. And he had, even in the beginning, had this sort of arrogant tone, but he took advantage of, I guess, the situation, and when and he found out that Marilyn was so interested in writing, not in writers. She's so interested in writers, and the written word as far as what writers do. She hated poets and playwrights, and she was just she's a bright cookie. And he pretty much used that as if, so she's going to adore me because I'm a writer and I'm quote-unquote Arthur Miller. And he basically sets things up so that she falls even further for him. He's there for this, that, or whatever. He tells her all kinds of supportive information. And he seems like he's really... loving of her in the beginning, but he also doesn't want Marilyn to do anything but be a wife and mother. And she also had a couple of miscarriages with him, so which is really hard. It's very hard for women when they're trying to have a baby. It's just, even if you don't expect it, if you get pregnant and you don't expect it to, you haven't expected to get pregnant and you lose a baby, it's disheartening. It's just something about it. Maybe it's, seems like to me, and from what I know about it, and different women I've spoken to over the years and who have worked tirelessly on their fertility issues and had to grasp the reality that sometimes it's just not going to happen. So Marilyn, you know, was going through that at the same time that she was with Arthur Miller, who then at some point changes his feelings for her, and he wrote a really scathing, horrible thing. Somewhere he left this information out for Marilyn to find, and he said some things like something to the point of, I don't know why I ever said the things I said to her. She doesn't have a brain in her head. He said things like that were just basically denigrating her intelligence, talked about her as if she was just a pain in the ass. He was really, it was so awful. And this is somebody who's a writer, so she naturally looked up to writers as being just a little bit higher than the rest of us because of the way they're able to arrange their words and put them so succinctly together. And it was just cruel. I don't know if he did it on purpose or what. When there was a movie called The Misfits, it was the last movie that Clark Gable made. It starred Eli Wallach, who is, you know, now passed on, also a brilliant actor, and Thelma Ritter, and Montgomery Ward was in it. I've seen the movie, and I believe that I even read something about that, either the screenplay or I tried to read the premise of it. I've tried to read Arthur Miller stuff because I was trying to get myself to not dislike him as much as I have disliked him, and It just didn't help. It just got worse. In the movie, in this documentary, they even showed a clip in the film, The Misfits. This is just how nasty the psychological things he did to Marilyn. There is this film clip, and Marilyn is walking into a room with Clark Gable, and there's a cabinet door, like a wardrobe cabinet door, open. On the cabinet door open, it almost was about like a door, like a locker door from your high school room, but it wasn't a locker. It was like a wardrobe door. There were pictures of Marilyn and her different acting, like stills from different films that she was in or different poses of her, wonderful pictures. And he actually had written in one of the lines for her to say as Clark Gable starts to pass it, because in the film he's enamored with her youth and her beauty, and he's trying to have a relationship with Marilyn in the film, and Marilyn was equally enamored with Clark Gable. But as they're passing this door, she starts to close it, like, don't pay any attention to that. And he goes, no, wait a minute, what's that? And she's like, no, don't, you know, that's nothing. You know, he wrote a line for his wife, and this movie, The Misfits, was supposed to be, according to Arthur Miller, a love, it's like a Valentine sort of love letter to Marilyn from him. So he writes this screenplay, and in this script, he has her say about her work that's on this door that it's nothing. And as the Clark Gable goes, no, wait a minute, and she goes, oh, no, it's just, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, psychologically, why would you do that in a love letter to your wife? Why would you do that? But, of course, at the time, he had written this scathing, information about Marilyn from his thoughts, what he thought about her. And Marilyn did read it, and Marilyn was really devastated. And it was just horrific, especially since Marilyn's self-esteem was starting to fracture. She was, at the time, connected, somebody had sent her to a psychiatrist. That's not the same as what I'm doing, psychologist. A psychiatrist who has an MD. The psychiatrists are the ones that normally prescribe medication. There are times that psychologists prescribe in certain states that's more prevalent now. It's getting that direction. But mostly, psychologists do not prescribe medication. But this guy was specifically a psychiatrist, and he was what I wouldn't lovingly say, but what we would term in society based on his behaviors, we would call him a quack, because he was a very bad, unethical doctor. And he prescribed horrific medications that did not actually meet the standards for his clients. But he was a psychiatrist to the stars, quote unquote. So he felt like he was untouchable. And he was prescribing medications to get what he wanted out of them. He actually ended all of his clientele so that he could just work specifically on Marilyn Monroe. That already tells you that this person is unethically taking some kind of horrific stance with somebody. There's no reason why any psychiatrist should have to only have one client unless they're bilking that client out of a lot of money and they're trying to manipulate and control them. And then when you add in the fact that he can prescribe anything he wants, which he did, and it affected Marilyn's personality and her mental well-being, it's disheartening. It's just hard to watch this film without bawling if you understand anything about psychology, or just even understand how you would feel if people were constantly taking advantage of you. And the only reason they're doing it is because of who you know and what kind of money you have, and because you were somehow gullible enough to believe that their credentials made them a good person or made them somebody who was doing things professionally as their credentials dictate that they should. We all know that there have been all kinds of doctors out there, whether they're medical doctors or sports doctors, or there's all kinds of professionals that have unethically utilized their credentials and power. And all of this is coming together to create this really confused personification of Marilyn Monroe. So, yeah, we're getting towards the end, and basically, there's no point in my covering the end of Marilyn's life, which tragically moved along the path of these really negative, selfish, unethical people that were in her life. She did have people in her life that cared about her and loved her, but I think that the drugs and her fractured self-esteem just made it even more difficult for her to trust even those that she could trust, and which eventually led to her demise, I believe. Oh, we have a caller. One moment, folks. I'm going to go ahead and bring you in, see if you'd like to say something. Were you hoping to weigh in on the Love, Marilyn movie? Okay. I'll go ahead and put... Oh, yeah. I guess they were not really looking to call in. But anyways, I apologize, folks, if I didn't say the number enough. It's 646-727-2914. It's Barry Bainbridge time, signifying that we are just about at the end of our hour. But anyways, one of these days I'm going to remember to tell you the number. And I will try to remember to look and see if somebody's called in. I sometimes don't pay attention. Okay, but anyways, so basically the end of Marilyn's life and the writings that you see in this film that we're following chronologically of her life did give you basically a more succinct idea of what was going on, from how she started to how she rose and how she navigated around the obstacle personalities that were around her until she finally succumbed to the mean-spirited things that were around her. And yes, I think that I believe if Marilyn had had just one good break with a personality that she actually still had trust for, she might have made it. She might have made it, but instead what she's given us is an incredible insight into how manipulative personalities and unethical professionals, how they can actually negatively affect a person's life to the point of their existence being cut short. It also tells you about the inner workings of somebody who everybody thinks of more of for her body and her beauty, and yet what concerned her most was her acting ability and her intelligence level, and the things she thought about. She thought about a lot of things. So anyways, if there's one thing I would suggest is that you take a gander at this movie, Love, Marilyn, if you haven't. It came out in 2012, and you can find it on, probably can find it on Netflix or Amazon Prime. I'm sure it's out there in the, you could probably find it in DVD or some DVD rental, something out there. But check that out, or take a look at the book that has her writings and diaries. You'll find it. Just look up Love, Marilyn, and it'll tell you about the book so that you can find it and read some of the letters. What's nice about it is you can actually see her handwriting for some of the things that she wrote. It was wonderful. You might also find it on HBO. They're probably going to show it on HBO or one of those shows again. So, check it out, Love, Marilyn. You might find some things in your own life. You might find that some of the people that you trust and you love might be trying to lead you places you don't really want to go, but it's because of what they want for you, not necessarily what you want for yourself. And that's something that we should all look at and think about. Who's overly influencing us, and what is their reason for doing that? We should all ask ourselves, what is it that somebody truly wants from us? Some people just want us to be happy and just to be in our presence. But when people get real invested in what we should be doing or where we should be doing it, when they're more invested in what they want us to do, then you might want to consider if you need to either back off from them or figure out a better way to lay down stronger boundaries. Okay, let's go ahead and take a look at what's coming up next week. Tomorrow we have Friday Traffic Jams with Lennis. It's at 5 o'clock Pacific Time. She said she's going to be mixing it up. I think it's going to be a little bit of a surprise, but it sounds like she's going to get you all set for your weekend parties. So turn her on. It'll be an hour to slide you on into your weekend. And then on Saturday at 2 p.m., there's Time to Love with Lydia. She always has something intriguing to talk about, and it always relates to how we can love ourselves better. And so join her at 2 p.m. It's always a good show. You never know what you're going to hear, and when you do hear it, almost always it's something you can use to see and live a better way for you. On Sunday, there's Lennis' psychic readings at 3 p.m., and she lets you ask one question only, a psychic question, and she'll answer it. And every ninth caller could win a one-hour free psychic reading, which is worth $60. Normally she charges $60 for an hour reading. Several people have won that, including our manager last week. Well, if the manager wanted, that means you need to call in there, folks. Hang on the line. And sometimes there's a long wait because there's a lot of people calling. But hang in there. I think there's a couple of people that hung up. So they hung up just before they could have got that ninth caller, and that led to the manager getting it. So, yeah, Lennis Psychic Readings, 3 p.m. on Sundays. On Monday, we have LNB Passage to Empowerment, and that's at 7 p.m. And the show on Monday is The Power of Moving Past Your Fears. So that's going to be a big topic. And it's most of us have some little fear that we're sort of dealing with, whether it's spiders or the neighbors or homework, our finances, or maybe just going to bed in the dark. I don't know. It could be anything. Maybe you're fearful of your underwear. I saw that in a movie. That's how come I'm putting that out there. But, folks, if there's anything in the world, people can find a reason to fear it. But we're going to talk about ways to move past that. So you can put your underwear on and dance around and be happy about it. So that'll be Monday at 7 p.m. On Tuesday, we have BYO Brilliance. That's at 6 p.m. And Tuesdays, the show is The Brilliance of Redefining Your Goals with Focus. This is going to be a good show, folks, for you to join in. It's going to be a three-part series. And basically, we're going to take a good look at what it is you're trying to manifest, what your goal is, your aspirations, you know, and talk about how to redefine it, you know, refocus it, talk about things we're doing that get us off focus, and how to bring ourselves back into focus. And that, again, 6 p.m. on Tuesday. Then on Wednesday at 7 p.m. next week, Lennis does In the Studio with Lennis. And so her show is at 7 p.m. She talks about entertainment and hot topics, sports. That's her entertainment focus, the big entertainment show for Lennis. And that's on Wednesday. That brings us back to Filmcology. And quite honestly, I was looking at all these different movies that I was trying to bring in to look at, what to figure, and it's been hard to figure out exactly where I wanted to go. I love monster movies. Haven't had a really good monster movie in a long time. And then there's, of course, drama has a lot of psychology in there. There's a lot out there. But I decided that I'm going to go with just something for fun. Let's just have a little fun. And the reason I say fun is because, well, you know, monster movies are fun. I mean, there's just something about them. Now, the movie I'm going to use, and the reason I'm going to use it is it's a little bit weird. And I want to make sure you understand what movie I'm talking about. The movie's called Frozen. And that movie is not the Frozen that your children would want to see. This is the horror film called Frozen. Now, you may think that I'm a little weird in saying that it's fun. I'm just trying to get away from the documentary for a minute and go with something that could possibly happen. And I would like to talk about some of the psychological aspects that go on in that film that so that you kind of have an idea of, well, you know, just so that you have an idea of well, how people are. Friends, relationship. This movie takes place in the snow. Snow has a sort of special creepiness to me, but I hope that you will look at it. It's called Frozen. I'm sure I think if I have Frozen, and it's the one where people are at a ski lodge. So it's not, like I said, it's not animated. Look for the film that's Frozen and is not, it's not the one with Kristen Bell. So it's the one that came out in like 2011, I believe it was, 2012? Yeah, I think it was maybe it was 2010. Yeah, that's it, 2010. So look for Frozen, the 2010 film, and you should be able to get it anywhere and take a look at it. And then we'll talk about emergency situations, friendships between boyfriend, girlfriends, and then the friends. So join me next week, Filmcology, with Frozen, the film from 2010, not the animated one. And thank you for joining me, folks. Those of you who did call in or were listening, if there's anybody out there. And, again, please take a good look at Love, Marilyn. Whether you're into Marilyn Monroe or not, it's a really good psychological piece to consider about people and people you think you know. Take care, everybody. Have a good night. Bye.